Support comes from Empower Missouri's Affordable Housing Coalition, working to address the causes of housing insecurity and homelessness through tenant advocacy. Information at empowermissouri.org/housing.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Hi, everybody. This is Jason Rosenbaum, politics correspondent for St. Louis Public Radio. Fred Wellman has become a well-known presence on social media platforms and in the podcast world. But the Wildwood resident is now getting involved in electoral politics by running against Republican Congresswoman Ann Wagner in Missouri's 2nd Congressional District. Let's be very clear about this. Wagner is a very difficult opponent for any Democrat, and a lot of Democrats in the 2nd District who have been overconfident about their chances at unseating her have been sorely disappointed, even as the district has become more competitive over the years. Wellman, though, thinks that he can be the one that ultimately unseats the Baldwin Republican. And last week, he sat down with me to talk about why he decided to run, the challenges of facing someone like Wagner, and responding to some of Wagner's preliminary attacks in what could be a very testy campaign. Here's my conversation with Fred Wellman. Why did you decide that this was the time for you to run for office?
My entire life has been around stepping up when the trumpets are sounded, right? I joined the Army. Instead of going to Mizzou, I went to West Point. When 9/11 hit, I was a reservist. I volunteered to return. When COVID hit, I volunteered to run a field hospital. And I've always had a sense of when a moment calls, a moment calls. And for me, that moment was when I woke up that day as the big billionaire bill passed and the split screen of seeing the United States Senate arguing how much they're going to take away from Americans' health care, how much more they're going to take. And if you remember, the other split screen was Jeff Bezos having his $56 million wedding in Venice. And I thought to myself, we have got a situation where my kids, and I have four kids who are adults, are not going to have the American dream that I grew up believing in. That my father was a World War II vet who got the GI Bill and bought his first house and went to first guy to go to college in his family because of the GI Bill. And so we were raised, if you work hard, you can achieve in America. You can own a home. You can climb the corporate ladder. And instead, I have four kids who are struggling. My youngest son used to be a bartender. He didn't even qualify for ACA, qualified for Medicaid. My youngest daughter owns a small business, had her worst July in 5 years for no other reason than tariffs. So for me, the moment, and I had decided not to run for office for many years. I've had a rough life. I served, I have PTSD, I lost my spouse. But in the end, it was like, I have to do more. I cannot just sit back, talk to a camera, and more. If I have an opportunity to serve, I think I should step up. So I stepped up.
Why did you decide to run as a Democrat? Because you do have experience working for the Lincoln Project, which, correct me if I'm wrong, the main purpose of the Lincoln Project was to steer Republicans who don't like Trump or become disillusioned to Trump to vote for Democratic candidates. So why not primary Ann Wagner as a Republican?
Well, I'm not a Republican. I stepped away from the Republican Party decades ago. It's interesting. The founders of the Lincoln Project were all hardcore former Republicans, operatives. Most of us staffers, I was a staffer. Most of us were Democrats, actually, professionals in our field. I was brought in, I actually met Steve Schmidt in Iraq when he was working for Vice President Cheney, and he came over to visit and do some, I escorted him around. We had some great conversations. Matter of fact, when Vice President Cheney visited the Iraqi troops, I was the guy that arranged that. But for me, I joined the Lincoln Project because my mission was to help them convince veterans and military service members and family members that Donald Trump should no longer be the commander-in-chief, that he was unfit to continue as commander-in-chief. That was my role. I was the senior advisor for Veterans Affairs. So for me, almost exactly what we just talked about, to me, it was a call to service, that I had this opportunity with an organization that was at the time, if you remember, doing things that no one else was doing, going hard, right? You know, when they go high, we go low, or, you know, when they go low, we go high, we were going lower.
You were going pretty low.
And we got in trouble. I think one of my colleagues got in trouble for tweeting that, you know, when they go high, we'll go lower. But for me, the role was to convince my fellow service members and veterans that we deserve better as a commander-in-chief. And that was my role. So I joined Lincoln Project for that very purpose, to continue my mission, which was a pro-Democrat, pro-democracy mission and to do that. So I was not one of the founders. I was a Democrat. I'm still a Democrat. I've been very involved in Democratic politics. I moved home 4 years ago for my fiance, who's wonderful, brought me back up to my hometown. And I've been involved helping various candidates like Joe Peerless and others run. I'm a proud Democrat. I believe we offer an opportunity. I believe we're a pro-democracy party that's got a big tent for even guys like me and everybody else. So I'm proud to be running as a Democrat. I think it's the appropriate place for me. And I believe we have an opportunity right now.
So I have been covering the 2nd District since 2016.
Wow.
So a long time.
Yeah.
So long before Cort Van Ostrin ran, before Jill Shoup, Trish Gunby, Ray Hartman. And every new candidate who comes in is always very overconfident. I'm going to just be honest.
No, that's okay.
They say, well, Ann Wagner doesn't do town halls. She's not accessible. She's rich. And we're going to win because we have the right message. And she wins every time.
Yeah.
Not one of those people I mentioned have even won the St. Louis County part of the district.
Yeah.
So what makes you think that you're going to be different and actually be the person that, A, wins St. Louis County of this? Because if you don't, then everything else doesn't matter. And B, be different than people who had the, what I would just say is overconfidence in thinking that they can topple this candidate.
Sure. She's a powerful person. She has been comfortable in Congress for 13 years. She's got a war chest that is pretty big, $3.7 million last time we checked. She has her support base. But we've seen nothing but an erosion. She underperformed Donald Trump this last cycle. We have polls just from May showing she's underwater for the first time. She loses to a generic Democrat. I'd like to think I'm not generic, if nothing else. And you're right. You can't be overconfident. I think that's why I'm different. In that sense, is I'm a soldier. I've gone into battle. I invaded Iraq twice, for goodness sake, leading soldiers in combat. So what we do is we take a very serious look at the risks, the benefits, the path to victory. That's what I did as an aviator every time I flew. And so for me, we've sat down, we looked at the fundamentals of this moment. It's a little inside baseball, but the moment we face politically is very unique, right? It's not a great time to be an oligarch, for example, and she's tripled her net worth. It's not a great time to be avoiding your constituents, and she's avoided her constituents. But more than anything, those wonderful people that ran, look, I have nothing negative to say about it. Jill Shoup's a dear friend. I know Ray. I know Trish Gunby. But in the end, we've never been able to get that national attention and the focus, except for a few times. Court did well. Jill had the COVID pandemic to deal with, right? So we are going to try, and our goal is to take that energy that took 7,000 people out on Manchester Road for the No Kings Day rally, the kind of energy that has mobilized in this district, and take that across the district, introduce our message to everyone in the district, run everywhere. I think the biggest thing we have to do is have enough of a campaign, a large enough campaign that gets national attention and gets enough people hired and volunteered to get out and cover the whole district and run everywhere and tell them this is what we stand for. But let's look at this district too. Proposition A passed by 20,000 votes in the district. Abortion amendment passed, okay, in the district. So while people are voting for Ann Wagner, the things that we believe in as a campaign and as a party are popular in the district. We have to connect those two, and that means doing really, really hard work. So that's my intent. Work hard.
Yeah. So let's just get this out of the way. Right now, as we're speaking, which is October 2nd, 2025, the current district is St. Louis County, St. Charles County, Warren County, in Franklin County that comprise the second district. The new map would be St. Louis County, Jefferson County, Washington County, Crawford County, Gasconade County, and Franklin County. My view of it is that when I say the new map, I'm talking about the one that passed a few weeks ago. It makes it a little bit more Republican, but not enough for it to, quote unquote, be safe.
Agreed.
Is that your view as well? Does it really matter which district you run in? It could be the same dynamics, basically.
I agree. I believe no matter what the lines are being, I'm running to win with the same strategy. We get out there everywhere, introduce ourselves to everyone. I think in a lot of ways, it's obvious she supports this redistricting. I think that says a lot about her political instincts at this moment. The fact that she's willing to go directly and say, I want to change my district once again to save me or save my party in this state or in Congress. I think that's a very big political risk. I believe the Republicans have spent an inordinate amount of political capital to fight a losing battle that's going to be thrown out in the courts or overturned by our wonderful petition process, which is going to pass. What is it, 27 times we've done this in Missouri, and now 25 times we won, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly, but I think the big thing that, and again, this is inside baseball, but it's important for people to know, if the opponents to the new map get enough signatures, then this map goes in
onto a statewide vote in November 2026.
Right.
And you will be dealing with the current lines
right.
that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
Unless the legislature moves the election to March. And I'm just going to be really honest here. If they do that, I think that voters will vote it down.
I agree.
Because it'll be the only thing on the ballot. And I think that the people that are going to come to it, come to the polls are going to be high information voters who really don't like this.
And let's be honest, we're also talking, I'm talking Republicans. I have friends who are Republicans. A lot of friends, let me tell you, and they're not happy either. If you are, look, I swore an oath to the Constitution all my adult life. And it's the Constitution, and this is unconstitutional. The Missouri Constitution is it's un-American. The idea that just because the president's in danger of losing the House, they can simply redistrict it to save him. Even Republicans who are partisan say, this just isn't right. At some point, we have to say, this isn't partisan anymore. The things we are doing are right and wrong. And to redistrict in the middle of the decade for the simple finger that the reason that Donald Trump snapped his fingers is wrong, and we can all agree on that. And I think that's a message we have to carry. As far as in the baseball of running, I think I can introduce myself to the people in Gasconade and Jefferson and show my story. And my story's got bumps in it. I've had challenges. I mean, I've gone to war. I've lost people. I've made mistakes. But if you compare that to her massive stock portfolio, I think I can win that conversation.
Now, before we like talk about all your mistakes in excruciating detail.
don't worry, I'm engaged. I'm used to it.
I got it. Do you plan to like, you've been very critical of Trump. That's been like your forward-facing persona.
Yes.
And there could be a lot of pressure from DC people
yes.
to basically play that down because there's a lot of people in this district that like Trump.
Yes.
Like, what's kind of going to be your posture when you're talking about the president, given that if you win, it's going to be because people are really unhappy with
yes.
them. And if you don't, it's going to mean that like there are not enough people unhappy in the second district to shift this district to D territory. So can you talk about that?
One of the things about me that you'll find as we get to know each other, I hope we will during this campaign.
I hope so, too. I'm a very friendly guy.
Good. I like that. And you may even be a constituent, by golly. You know, for me, I am who I am. I joke a lot. The great philosopher Popeye once said, I am what I am. I am that guy. I can't change anything. I've done what I am very proud of the fact that I came into politics to oppose Donald Trump, his authoritarian urges, and the mistakes that he's made. The fact is, I see the effects of what Donald Trump is doing. And there's a thing, I had a guest on my show years ago who said, sometimes, Fred, cold, hard reality settles in. And right now, I believe America is facing a cold, hard reality. Our soybean sales to China have disappeared. Farmers are struggling. We are seeing healthcare prices. When they open the ACA window up here next month, Missouri's ACA costs are going to go from 14 to 45% higher. For commercial car insurance, it's going up 30%. Something like 25,000 people who live in Congressional District 2 are going to outright lose their health insurance in the next 6 months. All this because of Donald Trump's decisions to unleash DOGE, to unleash the Republican Party, pass bills for their friends. So I am not hiding from the fact that I have been against Mr. Trump since he came down that golden escalator. I've been against Donald Trump since he sat on a chair and said that he doesn't like people that were captured. Because we in the military venerate and worship those who have given the sacrifice of being captured. The fact that he was flying over Vietnam got shot down. So I've never had any respect for Donald Trump. I refuse to pretend otherwise. For those who support him, I respect that. But in the end, we have to agree that the realities of our lives at this very moment are being deeply damaged by the policies and actions of Donald Trump and the complicit Republican Congress. And that's my final point. My frustration and the reason I'm running is because Ann Wagner and Mike Johnson and the Republican House have shirked their Article I constitutional duty. The Congress is a co-equal branch of the United States government, and they have become a subsidiary of Trump, Inc. And I think that bothers, if you believe that you are a Republican or a Democrat and you say, well, I'm very strict constitutionalist, then you can't sit back and say that the House and the Senate are honoring the Constitution and their behavior by becoming subservient and kowtowing to the President of the United States. So my intent is to recognize that, make my case that the silent, like Ann Wagner, whose whole thing is being silent but going along, is just as bad as those who are driving the damage to us. And it's a hard case to make, I admit that. There's an uphill battle ahead of us. But you know what, man? I'm an old soldier. I went to Ranger School as a pilot, for God's sake. I don't shirk from a challenge, you know? You know?
Let's talk about, you probably saw her campaign statement against your candidacy.
Sorry, I mean to laugh, but I was like, okay, well, you Googled me, but yes.
Yes. Let's just say you're The Lincoln Project has had some controversial history after you came on board.
Yes.
I'll just say it. One of the co-founders was accused of some pretty bad sexual harassment, sexual exploitation.
Yep.
This was before you came in.
It is.
But I do think, like, if I had to guess what's going to be in a 30-second ad, it's going to be linking you to its worst impulses.
Oh, sure.
What's going to be... I think it's kind of like flippant to say what your response is going to be to that, but I don't think, like, I understand that politics is hardball and sometimes, like, they throw things at people that have, like, mistruths or whatever, but I did read those articles and there were bad things that happened in the Lincoln Project.
Absolutely.
So how can you address that point?
I was the guy that investigated it. You know, I was the crisis guy. So I had just taken over as executive director. I never met John Weaver or the other crisis that occurred. That was the founders. I was the executive director when I took over. I was unaware of any of that when I took over, because let's be honest, who wants to do that? In the end, they asked me to try and save the organization. I believed in our mission. I believed that we still had a place in the conversation that could stop Donald Trump, because we knew he wasn't going away at that point. And so I believe my mission was to provide safety or provide investigation, find out what's really going on. And then, by the way, do the victims a service by finding out the truth, investigating it, and punishing those who are involved. And for those who don't know, obviously there's personnel things I can't talk about. But I'm the guy who actually hired the law firm, did the investigation. We were the first non-PAC to actually issue an annual report. My signature block is on that annual report. I made sure our donors knew where every dollar went. We're the only PAC that did that last cycle. So for me, my role was to lead the organization through a crisis, investigate, provide support to the victims, which I did, including my own employees who were very scared at that time. I provided support to them. So you gotta remember, my job was to find out what happened and not brush it under the rug. And that's the accusation we'll hear, is, oh, he's the guy that brushed under the rug. I'm sorry, I hired one of the best law firms in America to investigate that, and it cost those guys an arm and a leg to do it, and I was the guy that rode that. And you know what happened when the investigation was over? I left. Yeah. I departed. So I look at it, you know, I don't mean to put everything in military context, but I'm sorry, I'm an old soldier.
It's okay.
I'm the son of a Marine. You know, it's like the guys who went to Vietnam, right? Look, we can disagree. The war was a waste. It was bad. It was not right. The mission was wrong, whatever it may be. But we had men and women, especially men, step up, go do their duty for their brothers and sisters, and then come home. And so for me, I saw a mission and a duty to fight for our democracy. And at the time, at the Lincoln Project especially, they were leading it in a way that no one else was. So I participated in that. I'm proud of the work that I did. Let's be honest, Donald Trump lost 6% of the military and veteran vote between 2016 and 2020. It was a coalition that did that, but I'm proud of the work I was part of that. So for me, I look at my time there as time that I did my duty to the country as I saw it, and I departed when that duty was finished.
Now, what's interesting is the statement also included the fact that you filed for bankruptcy, which you actually included in your ad.
Yeah.
So I don't really feel like you're trying to hide that or some of your other personal failings that you kind of measured.
No.
What did you make of the fact that they were trying to turn that into a negative? Because I've seen that before.
Of course they should.
I've seen that before, and sometimes that does plant a seed in people's minds, but sometimes it backfires too.
It does. Yeah, it should. And look, again, I have nothing to hide. There's public records. What kind of a fool tries to hide public records? My story of both, I'll tell both of them. First was 9/11. I was a project management consultant. My ex-wife now is a flight attendant for Delta Airlines, living in Peachtree City, Georgia, in one of the most affluent cities in America, 10th most affluent city in America. I got mobilized on 9/11 in the reserves that day. I was sent to a secret planning conference, and they mobilized me with like single zero, if you can imagine, like no taxes, no tax withholding. Like a lot of Americans, we were living at our means, not above, not below, at. And all it took was my wife to be furloughed from her job as a flight attendant and me to lose my project management job and not be in process in the Army correctly. 3 months later, like a lot of Americans, we were done. We were out of money. And I'm not proud of that. I wish I'd had more in savings. But I think that's a story of so many Americans. You look in your neighborhood, even nice neighborhood you live in, when there's a divorce, the house goes into foreclosure. When there's cancer, people lose everything. That's the American story. So I'm not embarrassed the fact that I stepped up for my country and paid a price financially. And I hate that too. The second one, let's be honest, I got divorced. The pandemic hit. My company was very much involved in nonprofit support. Hey, first thing nonprofits cut during a pandemic is probably PR, right?
Yeah.
And so our company failed. I had $500,000 in loans against that company. So I was left with no choice when I closed the company, so I declared bankruptcy the second. So look, I can understand judging someone who has that history. But if I would hide it if it was because I was the joke. By the way, you'll laugh. You'll see online. They always like to joke that in my bankruptcy filing, this last one, one of the assets I listed was my Xbox, and that I wasn't living lavishly. Which Xbox? It was the old one too. That was what the joke is. It wasn't even the Xbox Series S. It was like an old 360, I think, or Xbox One. You know, and that's where I wasn't living above my means. I kind of wish I had been, but I was living at my means. Like, and again. That is, I think so many people see that. Did you know the bankruptcies right now are at their highest point since the pandemic? And we're not even in a recession officially. Average Americans are feeling the bite. And in a lot of ways, I'm that guy. Small businesses fail. I wish it had done better, but here I am. I have nothing to hide.
So the other thing that they mentioned were just all these lists of things that you quote unquote support, like including like the future mayor of NYC and all that stuff. But after doing a Google search, when they mentioned trans related stuff, you have been very critical of efforts to ban gender affirming care for mm-hmm. minors.
Yeah.
Like that's out there. Mm-hmm. And I understand like there is this tendency in Democratic politics land to not play up mm-hmm. that issue. But I've also talked with parents of transgender kids that want people to understand what not only they're going through as parents, but also what their kids are going through,
yeah.
and not just use them as political footballs. So
exactly.
Can you, that is going to be kind of the go-to attack on every Democrat.
Of course.
And I sort of understand the desire and reflex to basically say it's a distraction. And it probably is from all the economy stuff.
Right.
But I also think saying it's not important like kind of mitigates it for people who actually have family or children in that situation.
And I know them. You know, I've had the privilege, the honor to get to know Rabbi Daniel Bogard. I'm sure you've met Daniel
Bogard. That is literally one of the people I've interviewed.
Exactly. And he and I have had, he was on my show and I've gotten the opportunity to know him. One of my soldiers was transgender and transitioned after we served. And I remember him being so worried when he met me after he transitioned. Worried that I would judge him as an old Army officer from West Point, as a kid from Missouri, you know, obviously conservative. But, you know, people say I look conservative. And I remember being so proud of him because it was a very brave thing to do. And look, I believe a simple thing. I'm not a conservative, but I was raised here in St. Louis in Kirkwood by a Marine. And I was raised to think that being conservative meant letting people live their lives as they choose, letting people find their own happiness, not trying to judge others because of what we perceive as their lives and failing to understand what their lives are. I am no place to judge anyone. I have had very difficult times and I didn't talk about those much until just recent years. I very rarely talked about my wife getting killed in a car accident or the fact that many of my family members are LGBT. I'm very proud of them. So to sit back and say, use them as a political pawn or say that their lives are important or not on either side of this, I won't do it. Now, having said that, no one's waking up in the middle of the night worrying about the 7 kids who have played NCAA sports in the entire history of NCAA. They are worried about the fact they can't pay for their wife's medicine. And this is a story that came out. My friend Mark Boyko, he said he knocked on a door in Kirkwood. And after getting through 2 of those issues with an older gentleman, the gentleman told him, well, one thing that's bothering me is my wife can only afford her medicine for 1 week a month. So for 3 weeks of the month, she's laying on her couch because she can't get up. Those are the things that keep people up at night. So I'm happy to address that issue. And if they want to attack me because I say, let people live, that people who are less than 1% of our population should be attacked, fine. If that's what you want to prioritize, I'm going to fight for them. I'm going to fight for LGBT. I'm going to fight for our new, you know, the largest growing population in CD2 is Indian immigrants, is South Asians. I'm going to fight for them. I'm going to fight for my Muslim neighbors because I fought for them in Iraq. I'm going to fight for whoever steps up because every single person who's American or an immigrant deserves a fair chance. That was the whole premise. My father's family came here in 1640. They were Puritans, for God's sake. My mother's family came through Ellis Island. They're escaping Italy. I am the American dream. And to sit here and have people attack other Americans for very existing, I won't have it.
Last question for you. I think that this race is a canary in the coal mine race.
I agree.
And I don't just say that to humor you.
No pressure.
I would say if you win, it means that like it doesn't matter how many states they try to redistrict. I agree. The Democrats are taking the House.
I agree.
I would say if you came within 5 points, it means the Democrats are taking over the House. I know you agree with me. Otherwise, you wouldn't be running. But can you just convey why you think this race is nationally important in the grand context of where we are as a country right now?
That's a great question. Let me start Missouri first, because that's where we are, right? If we flip Missouri to, look what they're trying to do. They're trying to get us down to one seat. If we can flip two and get us to three seats in this state, the down ballot effect, there's very good chance we'll flip two or three of those House seats for the House as well. That means we break the supermajority. The power of CD2 at this moment, if my team run an effective campaign, if I work with the down ballot candidates, Democrats who are trying to win, and we flip not just my seat and those, we truly do change the direction of Missouri and our very will. Nationally, we need people to understand that this state matters, that all states matter. There is no flyover country in America, that we've been off their radar. They dismiss us as a red state. They dismiss us as backwards. Whatever they want to say, I laugh at it. I love this town. I came back to this town as an adult, the city, the state as an adult, and I fell back in love with my home, and I've hiked through all the hills. I've hiked gone through the caves and the Ozarks. I've paddled the rivers. This is a beautiful, beautiful place with wonderful, good people. Put politics aside, there's so much opportunity in St. Louis, so much opportunity in Missouri, so much opportunity in CD2. We need to put that on the national radar once and for all. So if I have the power and I have a blessing of a large audience for my own previous work, if we can make people pay attention and change this state in a very real way, we can change the United States. I think you're absolutely right. This is a canary in coal mine. Is, you know, when I was growing up here, we were a bellwether state. You're probably too young to remember that.
No, I'm not.
Where Missouri went, the country went.
No,
hold
on.
I want that to come back.
Stop for a second. I know I look like I'm 25, but this is year 19 for me.
Okay,
and
I
covered Obama and Hillary and Bill Clinton coming to Missouri.
I think Bob Young sent me to West Point. So I don't know.
So that tells you are older than me, but I do remember a time this was a bellwether. But
it is. And look, we can go down the rabbit hole for days of why we're more red now than before and why we lost the rural. But I do believe in the end, if we, especially as Democrats, can come here, make our message clear, raise enough, let's be honest, money, you know, we need money, go for wellmanformo.com. But if we raise the money and raise the attention to that district, we can get our message to more people and bring them across the aisle to us and change this state. So like I've said a couple of times, you're probably sick of hearing it. I don't shrink from a challenge. I know we've got a fight ahead of us. I've never run from a fight. I'm not going to start now.
That was Fred Wellman, a Democrat who is running for the 2nd Congressional District seat, which for now takes in parts of St. Louis, St. Charles, Franklin, and Warren counties. You can read all of our coverage of the 2026 election cycle by going to stlpr.org. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, and thank you for listening. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.